Morning AIM with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, March 29th, 2005. Killer flu hits North Korea. On March 27th, North Korea acknowledged an outbreak of avian flu virus, H5N1, for the first time, saying hundreds of thousands of chickens were killed to prevent its spread so that the disease wasn't passed on to humans. In Great Britain, emergency planners have begun to look for sites for special mortuaries, reported The Independent. Each of these mortuaries will be capable of storing 1,000 bodies. And the government has changed its public position that an avian flu pandemic could be expected to kill 2 million Britons, not 50,000 people, as reported only a week ago. And some people in Great Britain, scientists are saying the figure could go as high as 11 million. And then, in Africa, the World Health Organization reports that an Ebola-like virus, then diagnosed as Marburg, is ravaging Angola. And in Luanda, the capital of Angola, people are beginning to evacuate the country. And people, visitors to Angola are warned, stay out of the country. Is this science fiction? No. All these reports happened on the same day, March 27th, 2005. Creating the Next Pandemic, Part 3, Staging the Operation. Today on Taking Aim, I'd like to first say that today we are coming to you by telephone because of technical difficulties. Please bear with us. Ralph?
Mystery fever death toll rises, reports News 24 from South Africa. An outbreak of unidentified hemorrhagic fever has claimed the lives of 93 people in northern Angola. Deputy Health Minister Jose Van Unum acknowledged late on Monday of the 101 cases reported from Uige Provincial Hospital, 93 have died. The mysterious outbreak was not due to yellow fever, dengue fever, the West Nile virus, the Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, or the Valley fever, stated Moises Francisco, a member of the Angolan technical team monitoring the outbreak in Uige. Angolan health officials have stated that the Center for Disease Control in the United States will be conducting tests to determine whether the fever is caused by the Ebola virus.
Ralph, by March 27th, the figure had risen to 121 people dead, and even more were sick. The South African-based Netcare Travel Clinic, which keeps tabs on outbreaks of disease in Africa, told prospective travelers not to go to Angola at least for a week, if not more. And Agence France-Presse stated that many expatriates, particularly, were considering evacuating their families from Angola. What did the Center for Disease Control identify this virus as being? Was it Ebola? Was it something else? They identified it as the Marburg virus, named for Marburg, Germany, the site of its first appearance in 1967. The disease kills one in four people who contract it, and the figures rise even more. Sometimes, like Ebola, killing as many as 90% of the people who contract it.
Now, the Marburg disease, which is a severe form of hemorrhagic fever in the same family as Ebola, was first identified in 1967 when laboratory workers in Marburg, Germany, were infected, and also in Frankfurt and Belgrade. And it was claimed that the cause of the infection was contact with monkeys from Uganda. This would soon be shown to be a fiction. In fact, monkeys from Uganda had vanishingly little to do with the root of Marburg.
Before we go to the root of Marburg, let's see what happens when people are contracting Marburg virus. After an incubation period of 5 to 10 days, the onset of the disease is sudden and is marked by fever, chills, headache, and myalgia. That's aching muscles. Around the fifth day after the onset of symptoms, a rash appears, most prominently on the trunk of the body, that is the chest, the back, and the stomach. Nausea, vomiting, chest pain, a sore throat, abdominal pain, and diarrhea then may appear. In other words, people think they have a very bad flu, or perhaps they're coming down with the measles. The symptoms become increasingly severe and may then include jaundice, inflammation of the pancreas, severe weight loss, delirium, shock, liver failure, and most importantly, massive hemorrhaging and multi-organ dysfunction. People can die within the frame of 1 week after the onset of the first symptoms, said a WHO, that's the World Health Organization, spokesperson, Fadela Khaib. And most importantly, again, a specific treatment for this disease is unknown. That's right. There is no treatment for the disease. All that remains is supportive hospital therapy, that is, balancing the patient's fluids and electrolytes, maintaining their oxygen status and blood pressure, replacing lost blood and clotting factors, and treating them for any complicating infections. Ralph?
Marburg is a variant. Marburg is a virus unseen before. Marburg is not merely a species of Ebola. It's distinct. And its distinction lies in its recombinant character. And what we see here is that the largest outbreak on record of Marburg virus occurred from late 1998 to 2000 in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, at that time killing 123 people. 75% of the victims, however, of the current outbreak are children under the age of 5, according to the World Health Organization, as reported by News 24 on March 25th. And what's distinctive about this is that Marburg has never discriminated by age. The fact that this overwhelming victim population now emerging in Africa, and it's not just Angola, it's emerging in Zimbabwe, it's emerging in Congo, it's emerging in Sudan, and all at the same time, indicates that there has been an introduction, and we will deal with that in a short time. The situation is bad, very bad, said Health Ministry spokesperson Carlos Albertos, reached by Agence France-Presse by phone. Angola health officials said there was it was impossible to quarantine the region bordering the Democratic Republic of Congo, and that the victims are now showing severe watery diarrhea, abdominal pain, nausea, constant vomiting, and gastrointestinal compromise, severe bleeding beginning from the fifth day from the gastrointestinal tract and the lungs, and the epidemic spreads. In fact, in 1998, when we look back, we see that the Center for Disease Control was giving a warning. It was at first a confidential warning about the anticipated emergence of a particular virus related to Ebola.
Now, the Ugwe region in the north of Angola is only 200 miles from the Democratic Republic of Congo, which was formerly called Zaire, and is the site of the original Ebola-like virus. We're going to look at the origins of Ebola and Marburg, these horrendous diseases where you can be dead within a week, with massive hemorrhaging and complete dysfunction of your bodily organs. An interesting, buried within an article that appeared on March 20th, is a statement from a World Health Organization doctor, unnamed, where she, and this is the quote, a World Health Organization doctor said she believes it is a man-made version of the Ebola virus, which also causes hemorrhagic fever where blood pours from every orifice of the victim's body. I repeat, this is Sunday, March 20th, an article by Wagatu Zamzolo. A World Health Organization said, doctor said, She believes it's a man-made version of the Ebola virus.
As reported in the London Daily Telegraph, Maya, Wagutu Zamzulu went into the history of the introduction of this virus in Africa and its correlation to World Health Organization activity. It is a man-made version of the Ebola virus, she stated, and it is affecting people throughout Angola, and not merely there, but it has emerged in the Sudan, as I indicate. Ebola virus, like virus, kills 4 in Sudan, and the death toll is up throughout the areas of the Congo as well.
Well, that brought me to Leonard Horowitz, a man who has looked intensely at the history of Marburg and Ebola viruses. His book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, and or Intentional. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. Well, I think before we address the extraordinary evidence that Len Horowitz has produced, we should take a look at the fact that the Center for Disease Control sent unique labs to Angola, and there is a connection between the laboratories and the emergence of this this outbreak. And I think it's important as well to cite the fact that Muslim clerics, according to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, are, quote, warning of a U.S. plot, and as such, they are objecting to vaccinations for measles, not because they oppose to vaccinating against measles, but because they state that this is part of an American plot to infect Nigerians on a large scale. Government officials attempt to play down the anti-vaccine sentiment, but in fact, authorities have had to suspend even polio immunization because of the conviction on the part of large numbers of people in Nigeria that these epidemics are the result of deliberate infection on the part of World Health Organization and other agencies which they maintain are controlled and operated by the United States. In 2003, Islamic clerics claimed the United States was using the polio vaccine to contaminate the population with AIDS and ordered a boycott based upon their conviction that the evidence was powerful. 3 powerful state governors in the north of Nigeria have joined the boycott and provided evidence of the role of the CDC and the World Health Organization in imposing illness and epidemic disease in Africa under the guise of programs of vaccination.
We should note, Ralph, that there is no vaccine for Ebola or Marburg virus. There is no treatment. There is no vaccine. Vaccine that is contaminated or not contaminated, nothing exists to prevent these diseases. It's important to understand, and for many years, people were looking for the source of Ebola and Marburg virus because it had never been seen before the onset in 1967. And remember that the first outbreak of this hemorrhagic fever appeared in Germany, not in Africa. So what was found out? Before we look at the research of Len Horowitz, an interesting foreword in his book is by Dr. W. John Martin, who was a former professor of pathology at the University of Southern California, and between 1976 and 1980, when much of the research on Marburg and Ebola was going on, he was the director of the viral oncology branch of the Federal Drug Administration's Bureau of Biologics, now called the Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research, which is the government's principal agency in charge of human vaccines. And he writes, this is referring again, Ralph, to the situation in Nigeria, too, with the polio vaccine, experimental vaccines grown in animal tissues and intended for human use were commonly tested in African monkeys. This practice led to the emergence of primate diseases, some of which were transmitted back to humans. He also notes that large numbers of rural Africans were selected as test recipients of experimental human vaccines, which again transmitted diseases back to humans. If we look at chapter 23 and an earlier chapter, chapter 21 in Len Horowitz's important book, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional, we see the man-made origin of Marburg and Ebola. And I have to stress again, just as this World Health Organization doctor said, Marburg and Ebola are man-made viruses. Litton Bionetics, which was a subsidiary of Litton Industries, since then purchased by Northrop Grumman, the mega defense industry conglomerate. Litton Bionetics maintained colony-born chimpanzees and monkeys in northwest Uganda, where scientists experimented on the animals, and then they exported these animals to laboratories worldwide. Horowitz writes, the Cerapithecus aethiops and the Macacus mulata that Litton Bionetics exported and other animal suppliers imported were the Marburg virus carriers to Europe during the first outbreak of the hemorrhagic fever in 1967, and also at UC Davis here in California, the Primate Research Center, where they had an AIDS-like virus outbreak in 1969, 1976, and 1978. There were also outbreaks in Philadelphia and Reston of Ebola-like viruses in 1989 and 1990 that again were associated with monkeys that originated at Litton Bionetics or had contacted the colony-born Litton monkeys when they were housed at the KLM Royal Dutch Airlines Amsterdam facility and while they were awaiting transport. Now, Laurie Garrett, in her 1994 book, The Coming Plague, Newly Emerging Diseases in a World Out of Balance, also reports on this information, as well as Len Horowitz. Ralph, do you want to discuss the experiments that went on in the Litton Bionetics, where they created Marburg and Ebola?
Yes, well, Maya, the rabidoviruses that they were injecting into monkeys and other animals were deployed as the germ from which Marburg and Ebola viruses evolved. In fact, these viruses, the Litton Bionetics report showed, were manipulated, mutated, and mixed with other deadly viruses, including sarcoma and leukemia viruses, until a strain was evolved for which there was no immunosuppression response and for which no vaccine could be devised. This is not just a question of testing to see how to prevent disease. This is, in fact, manipulating viruses and combining them for the express purpose of devising a virus that can be utilized to infect populations without the prospect of remedy or control. There is no ambiguity about the activity that is documented by Horowitz has been cited from sources from the Freedom of Information Act documents from Litton Bionetics. And as we will discuss, Maya, Litton Bionetics International, which derives in part from the activities of Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger and the centers of power in the United States, were in fact the operatives of Fort Detrick and Amarid, the main weapons development center of the United States military.
Well, Ralph, if you want to mention that as an aside right now, in 1972, the company which prior to having the name Litton Bionetics was called Advanced Bioscience Laboratories, it was purchased by Litton in 68, and in 72, that company was awarded the initial National Cancer Institute contract to convert what was then the Fort Detrick Biological Warfare Facilities into what became the Cancer Research and Development Center at Fort Detrick, where they do these programs that create virulent diseases, the viruses, and also cancers and AIDS. I'd like to mention that after 1967, the Germans in particular were anxious to examine the source of the Marburg virus. And Rudolf Seigert, who was affiliated with the Hygiene Institute of the Philips University in Marburg, Germany, wrote a book in 1972 specifically called Marburg Virus. And he looked at the history of these hemorrhagic fevers in Central Africa and discovered that the Marburg and Ebola viruses, particularly Marburg, was not found occurring naturally in any animals in the area or in any people residing in Central Africa. But among the 500 to 600 animals that had been shipped to Marburg and to Belgrade and also to Frankfurt, another laboratory in Germany, there had appeared Marburg virus for the first time from animals that had come from Litton Bionetics. And, Ralph, let's be specific about the tests that were going on. They used avian, bovine, that's cattle, chemical tests, equine, that's horses, feline, cats, guinea pigs, human diseases, murine, which is mice, ovine, sheep, rabbit, and simian, that's monkeys or chimpanzees, other primates, between 1965 and 1970, and it went on after that. This is just the documentation that Horowitz cites. They worked with this rhabdovirus, which was the source of Marburg.
Well, Maya, the Litton Bionetics utilization of the rhabdovirus studies began in 1965. Dr. John Landon, the Bionetics Senior Project Director, took, quote, minced tissue containing rhabdoviruses along with numerous hybrids, which are the result of crossbreeding for simian sarcoma and leukemia, in order to create mutant strains. They then took this concoction, which they had designed and devised, and inoculated into dozens of monkeys who were transported to other laboratories. Between 1965 and 1970, Litton Bionetics conducted extensive carcinogenic development with material inoculated, and as you indicated, having as its origin avian, bovine, chemical equine, feline, and guinea pig, and human, and murine, mice, and ovine, sheep, and rabbit, and simian, monkey, or chimpanzee tissue. This is a systematic laboratory weaponizing of a virus for a very specific purpose, to come up with a form of virus that cannot be resisted by human beings and cannot be contained by nominal prevention methods. It is nothing less than the pandemic that they purport to be concerned about preventing. On the contrary, under the cover of that, they are creating it for a very specific purpose themselves.
At a symposium that took place at the Frederick Cancer Research Center on March 19, 1975, which was held soon after the second Marburg virus outbreak, this time taking place in South Africa, Dr. Seymour Coulter, who was the director of the Southwest Foundation for Research, one of the premier simian, that is, monkey laboratories in the United States, and who also was charged with diagnosing new viruses that emerged from the National Cancer Institute-supported laboratories, he made a comment that the Marburg virus was man-made. Also at that symposium, Dr. Robert Whitney stated that while viruses occur naturally in monks and apes, that they are non-pathogenic.
Monkeys and apes, Maya.
Oh.
And the monks may be guilty, too.
Right. Monkeys and apes are non-pathogenic. Go on, Ralph.
Dr. Seymour Coulter was not merely making a comment. He made a formal charge. I mean, Seymour Coulter has all of the credentials, examined all of this and made a formal charge. These new viruses emerging from the National Cancer Institute laboratories were man-made Marburg design. And he made this as a formal charge on March 19, 1975, right after the second Marburg virus outbreak in South Africa. He was sounding the alarm that this was a bioweaponization of a virus for the purpose of infecting large populations and creating a pandemic. And that's the context that Dr. Whitney noted, that these are viruses which are causing disease in human beings by being transmitted in biologics, i.e. vaccines, that have been manufactured from the non-human primate tissues for that purpose. Well, we have the very scientists involved here who are on record. There isn't any question of a speculation here or a political conclusion being drawn by inference. These are the actual scientists with the data in hand who are stating, here's the evidence, here's the actual intent, and this is the consequence.
Well, let's look then at Ebola, because Horowitz writes later in his book, on May 11, 1995, Dr. Brian Mahey, a virologist at the Center for Disease Control, whose team had confirmed an outbreak of Ebola in what was then Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of Congo, at Kikwit Hospital. And it began a month it had begun in April, on April 10th, it was first diagnosed. And on May 11th, a month later, Dr. Brian Mahey revealed to the New York Times that the strain of Kikwit virus was, quote, nearly identical to the one that caused the first known epidemic in the Ebola region of Zaire in 1976, almost 20 years before. The same strain. Now, what's important about this, as we discussed in our prior shows of creating the next pandemic, is that viruses change over time. And in fact, they can change rapidly. And here we have over 20 years later, and the virus was nearly identical. Kikwit is 200 miles north of the Angolan border. So we have this in an area that's very close to where the current Marburg virus is appearing. Altman reported that the surprise was, Altman is the New York Times reporter who himself is an MD, Dr. Lawrence Altman, and he reported in the New York Times that the surprise, that's Mahi's surprise, was shared by numerous experts who, quote, had expected greater differences because viral strains from different locales tend to vary, end quote. Len Horowitz concludes, quote, and indeed, it is hard to believe that Ebola Zaire, which had differentiated itself genetically from its predecessor, Ebola Sudan, over the course of 5 months and 500 miles, had emerged 20 years later over the same distance, virtually unaltered. Some believe that modern technology may have helped, that is, refrigeration. Len Horowitz is stating conclusively that this was an intentional epidemic that was being brought to Zaire.
Maya, Advanced Bioscience Laboratories, ABL, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of Biomecrio Inc., began as Bionetics Research Laboratories, and I mentioned that for a very specific reason, because it is they, in 1968, who were acquired by Litton Industries, which became Litton Bionetics. And this was the company that was awarded the National Cancer Institute contract to convert Fort Detrick Biological Warfare Facilities into what became the NCI Research and Development Center, which is weaponized and militarized the entire arena of laboratory work and testing of viruses and testing of vaccines that we are describing today with reference to Marburg. Len Horowitz went to the University of North Carolina Library in Chapel Hill to do some in-depth research on original documents there pertaining to Marburg and Ebola. And
it's time now for station identification, and we'll return soon after.
Hi, this is Gil Scott here, an unknown bluesologist, speaking to you on Free Speech Radio, WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. Stay here.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Creating the Next Pandemic, Part 3, Staging the Operation. Ralph?
Maya, Just to address the overwhelming evidence assembled by Len Horowitz and others on Marburg and Ebola and what he calls the the chilling propaganda to cover the trail. He did an in-depth investigation of the laboratory data, and he found that human cases of Marburg disease had only been reported in Germany and Yugoslavia, although numerous shipments of monkeys that were contaminated were sent to Uganda, and it is very clear that the purpose of sending them there was to create the conditions for disseminating the virus. The virus did not make its home in monkeys. In fact, it was injected into the monkeys for the purpose of dissemination. And indeed, the CDC sabotaged the documentation of this, but in the course of so doing, they left the trail that was documented and uncovered by Len Horowitz and others through this investigative work.
It is not just the virus that was later termed Marburg after it first struck the veterinarians and the animal caregivers and the laboratory technicians in Marburg, Germany, first in 1967. There were many other biological agents and diseases that were experimented with at the Litton Bionetics laboratories and in other laboratories throughout the world. I found on the internet a very interesting site that said Bioterrorism Agents and Disease A to Z. And these are the agents that are being developed and worked on throughout the United States, as documented by the Sunshine Project, and throughout the world. Anthrax, that's Bacillus anthracis, botulism, brucella, brucellosis, Burkholder, chlamydia, cholera, botulism, Q fever, I'm giving you, instead of the scientific names, what we know it by, E. coli, tularemia, Burkholder mali, which is glanders, plague, Q fever, ricin, salmonella in many different varieties, shigella, smallpox, which is variola, staphylococcus, entertoxin, typhoid fever, typhus fever, variola, again that's smallpox, cholera, encephalitis, and the many hemorrhagic fevers such as Lassa, Ebola, and Marburg, and then again also threats to water safety. This is important given what we've been discussing about the avian flu pandemic and the expected pandemic, according to the CDC, within 10 months and the preparations that I mentioned that are going on in Great Britain. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, it was noted in the press on March 29th, that in Atlanta there was a report that came out from the CDC that they've begun a series of experiments to see how likely the bird flu virus could result in the human pandemic. It's a six-month series of experiments. Now, we know these experiments have been going on. We reported about them in our prior Taking Aim programs. But now the CDC is saying that they're creating a new series of experiments, specifically mixing and matching the genes of H5N1 avian flu virus. And they're mixing it with the common flu virus, that has been common over the last few years, that is the genes of H3N2, which has been the cause of the most recent human flu outbreaks. Quote, the goal is to substitute the eight genes of each virus one by one with the eight genes from the other virus to see which of more than 250 possible combinations create flu viruses that could spread easily among humans. And this is reported by United Press International as just a very simple news release. And here we have the CDC experimenting with how they can make the avian flu virus into what would be a virtual pandemic, spread it much more easily. Ralph?
The Chronicle of Higher Education. Residents fight Boston University's biosafety laboratory. Boston University's biosafety laboratory is what is called a level four laboratory. And in this level four laboratory, they are engaging in the very practices that we have been describing. The biosafety level four facilities, in fact, are involved with anthrax, Ebola, and viruses that were obtained from the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, Maryland, with vials containing live anthrax spores and Ebola. In fact, the so-called elimination of hazardous waste of that facilities have jeopardized the surrounding communities. But apart from the objections and the fear on the part of those who are resident in Boston, they say that the university has been secretive and unresponsive from the outset, failing to inform the public about the actual conduct of the lab and the design of the experiments that are being conducted in this laboratory four at Boston University. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Defense and Homeland Security and Agriculture, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases are all engaged in this process with a huge, quote, infusion of cash by the federal government, which has resulted in a scramble among colleges and universities rushing to capitalize on the, quote, biodefense building boom. Beyond Boston University and the University of Texas Medical Branch, nine other universities have received large fundings to build less secure biosafety level two and three labs to carry out, quote, high-level research laboratories in the nation's expanded bioweapons research program. And in fact, the House of Representatives Select Committee on Homeland Security was informed that this is a program that is being generalized across the country.
The extremists continue to plot to attack again. This is not H.G. Wells. This is Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld warning Congress that terrorists are regrouping for another strike. Another strike? There hasn't been any strike by terrorists. And yet, here we have Donald Rumsfeld before Congress, before the House Armed Services Committee. In his testimony, he didn't provide any specifics on a potential threat or any attack. But he said quite openly, the extremists continue to plot to attack again. And what they are going to do is, according to the intelligence officers of the National Intelligence Council, which combines intelligence officials from the FBI, from the CIA, from all over the intelligence community, and with seminars that lasted over a year, and interviewing and having conferences involving over 1,000 people, they prepared Mapping the Global Future, report of the National Intelligence Council's 2020 project. It is the third unclassified report that they have prepared, one for each of 5 years, and they released it on January 13th, forecasting, quote, our greatest concern is that terrorists might acquire biological agents. Bioterrorism appears suited to smaller, better-informed groups, and they see it as the most overriding issue of the day. Bioterrorism. It is the age of bioterrorism, say some. But is it only a game? Only a game and only a drill. What I'm referring to are events that are going to take place between April 4th and April 8th involving Great Britain, Canada, and the United States. A five-day drill, the third installment of the congressionally mandated top officials training program, Top Off. We reported on prior drills on Taking Aim a couple of years ago, because these drills are held every 2 years. But are they only a game, and are they only a drill? Ask, The Washington Post, and Newsday. Ralph.
Well, you're citing Operation Top Off. Just in the state of New Jersey, and this is taking place in New Jersey and Connecticut, simulating large-scale terror attacks. It's the Associated Press and Newsday on March 17th. In New Jersey, all 21 counties and 81 hospitals will be coordinating with state police, hazardous materials teams, emergency management personnel, police, fire, and emergency responders, and a virtual television news network will be coordinating with officials, and the attacks, mock attacks, will simulate dirty bomb explosions, such as those which were tested in Seattle, and a bioterror attack that was tested in Chicago. And in fact, the next month's drill, the report states, will involve over 10,000 health and law enforcement officials, and the participants will be given few advanced details. It's going to, quote, unfold all the way. We're going to see how people react to the object of this exercise and to the control that we impose, stated Roger Shatskin, a spokesman for the state's Office of Counterterrorism. New Jersey asked to be selected for this year's drill, and industry executives are joining the simulation, and they're being induced to make bids for contracts to implement the programs, according to Newsday.
In the United Kingdom, it's called Atlantic Blue, and in Canada, it's called Triple Play, and involves officials from 19 federal departments and agencies. Again, this is April 4th to 8th. In the coming weeks, this is taking place in New Jersey throughout the state.
Here is the report by Eric Lipton in the New York Times on March 25th, or 26th. Doomsday Team Plays Out Scene After Scene is the headline. They disguise themselves as janitors, ambulance crews, and food processing plant employees. They gather supplies by staging burglaries at pharmacies and plumbing supply stores. They smuggle weapons into the United States by hiding them in furniture cushions imported from Europe or sneaking them in from Mexico. And ever so patiently and meticulously, the team of terrorists plots its attacks. Of course, the team of terrorists are provided by Washington. To federal officials, the conspirators are labeled Universal Adversary. Following doomsday scripts that the Department of Homeland Security has compiled, the storylines were developed through a collaboration of the nation's top anti-terrorist and law enforcement specialists. The New York Times continues. From the White House, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Departments of Homeland Security, Defense, Energy, Agriculture, Labor, Transportation, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the Environmental Protection Agency. Hundreds of pages of documents detail the guidebooks to the implementation of the Doomsday Plan in the United States. There will be limited forms of attacks, and they will follow a trade craft, said James J. Carafano, Senior Fellow for National Security and Homeland Security at the Heritage Foundation. The scripts involving Universal Adversary will involve chemical and biological attacks and will be generalized throughout the city and states of this country.
On March 16th, again, Eric Lipton in the New York Times reported about a document that was produced by the Department of Homeland Security. It's called the National Planning Scenarios. Now, he said it was he only just got it. It turns out if you part of it was leaked on the Internet by an Internet site in Hawaii. And if you type into Google National Planning Scenarios, you, too, can see the executive summary from July 2004. It's a very important document preparatory to these staged attacks, because it elaborates on 15 scenarios, among them blowing up a chlorine tank, estimating would kill 17,000 people and injuring 100,000, spreading pneumonic plague in the bathrooms of an airport, sports arena, and train station, killing 2,500 and sickening 8,000 worldwide, infecting cattle with foot and mouth disease at several sites, costing hundreds of millions of dollars. But it also has anthrax attacks with trucks driven through five cities over 2 weeks, spraying in aerosol form, 350,000 people exposed and 13,500 people dying. And what the New York Times doesn't mention, but is in the report and is mentioned by the Times of London, is that the most deadly of all these attacks, the most deadly, is a flu pandemic which begins in southern China and spreads within months to four leading American cities, claiming the lives of 87,000 people and putting over 300,000 in hospitals. Now, these are scenarios developed by the government, and if we recall not so long ago when there was anthrax attack in the United States, it was shown conclusively that this was a weaponized strain that could only have as a source CIA-funded labs. And to this day, the U.S. government has not tracked down, and we say intentionally so, the source of that anthrax. So when they prepare these national planning scenarios, we have to ask also, is it a game? Is it only a drill? We say no. This is setting in stage the operations for creating the next pandemic. Ralph?
Well, they're terrorizing the people of the United States, and they're terrorizing the people of the world. They're creating a climate of fear. They're creating a climate of total submission and acquiescence in the martial law state. They're institutionalizing the means of total control of the population, every aspect of our lives. They're preparing for and rehearsing mass quarantine, mass detention. This is not idle. This is not speculative. This is implemented through this series of games. Bird flu pandemic coming to the United States. Infectious Disease Society of America and Medical News Today reports on March 23rd. Immediate action is needed to prepare the United States for the coming deadly pandemic of influenza. This is from the IDSA, the Infectious Disease Society of America, and they are stating to Congress and to policymakers in meetings with congressional and administration leaders, they have stated that the H5N1 bird flu in Asia will develop into a pandemic that will impact the United States without any question. The report is very specific. And that is the context for what we've been describing as Atlantic Storm. As the Washington Post stated on January 27th, and under the headline, Not Science Fiction, this month, the scientific journal Nature published the news that American scientists have found a way to synthesize long molecules of DNA. It synthesizes viruses such as smallpox. And last week, a group of bioterrorism experts stated war game exercises called Atlantic Storm, in which current and former public officials are asked to coordinate a medical, political, and economic assault on the basis of bioterrorism, releasing smallpox and other viruses into the air on the Warsaw and Rotterdam subways, in the Los Angeles and Frankfurt airports, in the Istanbul Bazaar. It is clear that mass vaccination demands will be immediate, and it is clear that within a few weeks there will be hundreds of thousands of cases of illness, and that we will have to prepare for millions, and even a conservative scenario, the article continues.
Ralph, this is an editorial in the Washington Post. In other words, the editors of the Washington Post, the official spokespeople of the capitalist class in the United States, are buying into that this is not science fiction, because they close their editorial with the comment, a greater sense of urgency is required. Quote, this is not science fiction, one of the Atlantic Storm organizers said. The age of bioterror is now. And
the simulation will not measure the magnitude of what we have to do. We are crossing traditional lines among government departments, between domestic and foreign agencies, between the government and the scientific community, the pharmaceutical and biotechnological companies that manufacture drugs and vaccines will be brought into play. We are preparing for the country's overworked hospitals and the new and untested Homeland Security Advanced Research Projects Agency, the counterpart to the Defense Department's DARPA, to focus not just on specific vaccines, but on techniques. And this is, as you say, Maya, quote, not by science fiction. The age of bioterrorism is now.
And buying into this, Ralph, is an important work of the military-industrial complex. Aside from these other games, we have the National Strategic Studies Gaming Center, and they held Scarlet Shield. There were 8 of these strategic policy forum exercises at the National Defense University. The 8th one was on May 18, 2004. Subsequent to this, I am sure there have been more. What is important to note about these exercises, so-called exercises, is that at that time, as of last year, 110 members of Congress participated in those 8 events, such as in the 8th, 10 members of Congress participated, along with the Office of the Secretary of Defense, representatives from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Department of Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, the Readiness Force, the FBI, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and also state officials from who were Homeland Security advisors from Florida, Jeb Bush's state. Now, they do this, they simulate a bioterror attack. Again, bioterror, 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 when the evidence is in that bioterror attacks are created in the laboratories, official laboratories in the United States, and disseminated from them.
Well, Maya, what you're describing here is Scarlet Shield, which the Strategic Policy Forum has prepared, and which Donald Rumsfeld, had coordinated. It's an initiative of Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld. Members of Congress briefed Assistant Secretary of Defense for Homeland Defense, Paul McHale, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, Dr. William Winkerwerder, Undersecretary of Homeland Security for Science and Technology, Charles McQuarrie, and more strategic policy forum exercises are being planned. The laboratory preparation of the bioweapons, the actual dissemination of Ebola and Marburg and other viruses and the flu pandemic itself, then becomes the pretext for carrying out an operation. And I just want to mention one other important indication of what this is designed to accomplish. In Project BioShield, May 24th in the Washington Post, quote, "It is extremely rare these days to find something that the House and the Senate, the Republicans and the Democrats, all agree on. But after the Senate's final passage of the Project BioShield bill last week by a vote of 99-0, it seems there really is unanimous bipartisan support for preparation and for the mobilizing of the nation for the next biological terrorist attack."
Ralph, that's 2004. That's 1 year ago. Project BioShield and the pharmaceutical companies have been manufacturing vaccines nonstop since then. We don't have time today to discuss what I think is a critical article that appeared in Scientific American. I suggest you go to the Internet. The Scientific American website is www.sciam.com, and it's entitled, "If Smallpox Strikes Portland."
Well, Maya, the Scientific American report of March on smallpox striking Portland is a continuation, a very, very a dramatic indication of the totalitarian state that they are preparing for us with these nominal exercises, which are not exercises at all. The Sunshine Project, out of Austin, Texas, has done a series of extraordinary reports documenting the offensive bioweapons program that is proliferated across the United States, which is a defining activity of the martial law state, and a whole series of what are called U.S. chemical and biochemical weapons preparations, the documents for which are an extraordinary cumulative indictment of preparing the next pandemic. Part 4, this is going to take a Part 4, will detail in full magnitude, how this has permeated every aspect of our society and every city of the United States, secret labs across the United States, preparing the viruses in the United States, weaponizing bioterror as a primary instrument of the state apparatus in our own society. The target is our people. The crisis of humanity is the crisis of this system. The next pandemic is a crisis that indicates the decomposition of the state apparatus and the capitalist state itself. The resistance to this flows from documenting and acknowledging the magnitude and the totality of the plans in store for us.
You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program will be archived on our website, www.takingaim.info. If you would like a cassette or CD copy, please contact us at Taking Aim at PacBell, that's PACBELL.net, or Taking Aim at WBAI.org. We will be with you next week. Thinking of the eye. You know, I'm not to the game now, I go out.